Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again. Unbelievable.
Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake.
A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe it myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, the last round rule is in a... Oh, wait a minute. Wrong show, Mike. Wrong show.
Rival.
It's the rival. Episode 51 of the Last Round Podcast. Thanks again for joining us, guys. I'm Danny Z alongside my partner and co-host, Mike Shepard. Coming up off of the zone card in Madison Square Garden, Triple G and Derevyanchenko, which was obviously the most prominent fight of the weekend, right?
Another contender for fight of the year.
2 weeks in a row.
Mm-hmm.
2 weeks in a row. And we still have a pretty stacked fall schedule that's still incoming, right?
Yeah, we're definitely getting treated to a good end of the year.
Definitely. Definitely.
It's been a really good year, to be honest, all the year round.
It really has. I mean, we'd have to look back at the previous years to see what else is comparable to this year. But we can't complain. And obviously, this last quarter of the year probably will have the best lineup of fights. You never know.
Which means we'll be busy.
We'll be busy. We'll definitely be busy. But before, as usual, as we go into reviews and previews section of the show, we have another special guest on the line. 2016 USA Olympian. 21 years old. He's 10-0 with 7 KOs. He fights at 154 pounds. And he has a couple different nicknames, right? Mike, he's called Bad News, and then he's also been called boxing's best kept secret. Charles Conwell from, where are we at? Cleveland Heights, Ohio is on the line. How you doing, Charles?
I'm doing good, man. How you doing?
Thanks. Good, man. We appreciate it. Thank you for joining us. We know you're in Ohio right now, we assume, so you're a couple hours ahead of over here in L.A., so we appreciate this late-night phone call you're giving us. And then, you know, just to start off right off the bat, tell our listeners who might not be aware of who exactly you are, give them kind of like a general overview of who you are and what you're about.
I'm Charles Conwell, like you said, 21 years old, 2016 Olympian at middleweight, turned professional in about 2017, 10 fights, 7 knockouts, fighting again October 12th on this weekend. October 12th on the Alexander Usyk card. Looking to make another big statement on this card and get the W.
I'm glad you mentioned that you're fighting, obviously, this weekend in Chicago on the Usyk card. And then real quick, I do want to get your take on, just because it is breaking news, and the main event is obviously likely to be affected. Usyk's opponent, obviously, reportedly was tested positive for some banned substance by VADA. Just because obviously you are on the card, what's your opinion on that?
Man, it's crazy. They just found out so last minute. It's kind of crazy to me. But hopefully they can find a backup performer and the show still goes on. I was planning to still show anyway, so it really didn't matter to me. I was planning on still the show, you know, taking over the crowd here. Hopefully they find Usyk up on it. I know he's probably had a long, hard training camp and trained all that time and not fighting this time. Just scared him.
I like that answer. I like that answer. It's a very
show.
It's a very confident answer. And then, I mean, I know, like I said, it's essentially breaking news at least by the time we record this episode. But you haven't been told anything by like your team or the promoters or anybody about. I mean, the card is obviously probably still going to go on, but you haven't been told anything about it affecting the card or your fight?
No, actually, I find out the same way you guys find out through the internet. So I just be keeping up with boxing and stuff like that. So that just let me know. That was kind of shocking to me. It's Monday and they got a fight Saturday. So crazy. They're just not flying us out.
Charles, you kind of stole the show in one of your last fights when you broke your hand and then still got the TKO.
Yeah, man, definitely. That was real crazy. Still got the TKO, still fighting there one hand. That's kind of it's a challenge, but I got through it now. I got the TKO, so I was proud of myself.
You know, being an experienced amateur, I'm sure you know you've been through those sorts of things. You know, going through the amateur system, not really knowing who you're going to fight until you turn up on the day.
Can you say that again? I'm sorry.
I said, you know, obviously being an experienced amateur, you've been through, you know, those ups and downs and, you know, having to go through trials and tribulations because obviously, you know, when you go into the amateur system, you don't necessarily know who you're going to fight until you turn up on the day.
Yeah, going through that wrestling like that, I'm kind of used to it, but that was just like a different type of thing. You know, fighting through pain and fighting like with one hand, I never really done that, but it was definitely adversity that I have been through. It's crazy.
So, as we mentioned, and obviously, as you mentioned, you were a member of the 2016 Olympic team, which you guys obviously had a very talented pool of boxers. A lot of them at this point have already been world champions, or they fought for world titles. Out of that entire team, of that 2016 team, who did you hang out with the most? Like, who did you get along with the most out of all those fighters that were there with you?
I was really with all the guys. But two people I say I probably click with the most is Shakur and Chris. I room with Shakur a lot and Clarissa. And you know, I actually like Gary. I like Gary too. He was real cool. I can't say they all were my guys. But people I room with. The people I got close to this, so I'll say Shakur, Gary, and Clarissa because she's not that far from me. I knew her for a long time.
What did you think? Since you mentioned Clarissa Shields, I mean, obviously, she's obviously been in the news the boxing news the last couple days because of, you know, the incident that happened in Detroit for her, the Showtime card. You know, what's your opinion on that and what happened? Because obviously, her fight, she was the main event and it was canceled. What did you think about that whole situation?
That was actually crazy too, cause, man, it's just crazy. Like, people, I'm not gonna say, I feel like people were trying to blame her a little bit. It really didn't have nothing to do with her. So I feel like that was one thing. People were trying to blame her, but it really wasn't nothing to do with her. It was like somebody that's probably she knew or somebody that was just there, and they can't fully put it on her. So I'm kind of disappointed because I was ready to tune in on that fight. I still did tune in because I knew where the other guys drawing this, but I was really hoping to see Clarissa fight.
Did you think that Showtime was justified in canceling her main event? I mean, because essentially her opponent's trainer was obviously injured and didn't seem like he'd be obviously ready to be in the corner. Do you think they were justified in canceling the fight?
Yeah, that was kind of serious. I heard he had deep surgery.
Right, absolutely. And then you mentioned Shakur Stevenson, and Shakur is actually fighting for his first world title in the next month or a couple weeks, right, Mike? Mm-hmm. He's fighting
26,
right? Actually, next couple weeks. Mm-hmm. He's fighting Joette Gonzalez, who's actually out here from Southern California. Have you talked to Shakur lately? You know, have you talked to him? And if you did, you know, have you talked to him about this upcoming fight, his first world title fight? And what do you think about that matchup?
No, I haven't talked to Shakur. We keep in touch over social media, but I haven't talked to him or called him on the phone in a long time. But we definitely do keep up. I watch all his fights every time he fights on ESPN Plus. I watch all his fights, but I haven't talked to him in a while. But we keep in touch on social media and things like that. I stay tuned in on him. Hopefully, he stays tuned in on me. Just keep in touch like that. But I'll definitely have Shakur. Probably, I feel like Shakur is going to blow him out. He's going to win by unanimous decision. I think Shakur has got crazy feet. He's real smart in the lane. He was an all-around great boxer for me. But he won top top people. Like he's gonna be, he about to win his world title for sure. That's all he wanted to do. For. Since he started boxing, so I know for sure he's gonna try to win. Gonna stop him.
Have you sparred with him, Charles?
Yeah, I sparred with him a couple times. In the China Center. He's real talented. He's hard to hit. He got real good defense. That's Pete.
Without divulging too much, who got the best of who?
Huh?
Without divulging too much, who got the best of who during that sparring session?
Oh, man. It wasn't like that. Just playing around. Nothing serious. Not no real sparring.
And then, you know, speaking of sparring, you've sparred obviously some prominent fighters right now. You sparred Tony Harrison, who has currently a title at 154. You've sparred David Lemieux. You've sparred Sean Porter. You've sparred J-Rock, Julian Williams, Kid Chocolate. Out of all the sparring sessions that you've had, especially with the more prominent names in the sport of boxing, who did you feel that you learned from the most during that time?
I would have to say probably Tony Harrison, Sean Porter. Those are the guys I get the most around with. Anyway. I still spar Tony to this day. I just spar Tony last week. So I'd probably say Tony and Sean. I got the most around with those guys. So I learned for guys and being in there. But everyone you said was really good fighters. Real good fighter, real good chance.
Did you get a chance to watch Spence Porter? And if you did, what did you think about it? Did you agree with the decision?
Yeah, I did get a chance to watch Spence Porter. That was a great fight. I thought Sean was winning, but I thought they were gonna give him a draw. I thought it was gonna be a draw, but
I had Porter winning as well.
They get into the arrow, so that was a real good fight though. Sean surprised me a lot. He pushed Earl back and turned him real well on the ropes. So he surprised me a lot. I would like to see it again.
Did you because obviously going into this fight, Spence had the hype and he was a heavy favorite, and there's a lot of fans who were predicting that Spence would stop Porter. And you know, and stuff like that. But you know, us here on the show, I had mentioned that like it's not going to be easy. Porter gives a tough fight to everybody. He's giving a tough fight to Brooks, Danny Garcia, Thurman. Did you agree with that opinion beforehand that Spence was just going to kind of run all over him, or did you know because you've been in the ring with Sean Porter that you know it was obviously going to be a difficult fight like it was.
I mean, it's Sean Porter. You know, it's always going to be good, hard fights when you fight him. When anybody's fighting Sean Porter. So I knew for sure that he wasn't going to knock him out. I knew for sure he wasn't going to knock him out. But I didn't, to be honest, Sean Porter surprised me a lot. I thought it was going to be like a wider margin for Spence. But Sean went in there and the round started going. I was like, okay. Okay, he's doing what he's supposed to do. He's winning. That surprised me a lot.
Did you well now you mentioned it. So you're fighting Patrick Day this Saturday. What do you know about him? Have you been studying him, like any film on him or anything like that?
Yeah, I've seen some of his fight. He's a good boxer. He moves well in left hand to go. He does be in shape, I would say that. But I feel like things that I know, things that me and my team are working on, that I can for sure get to W. I know I can beat him, and I'm just going to show it on Saturday.
Charles, one thing I was wondering is, who nicknamed you the boxing's best-kept secret?
I nicknamed myself that. I felt like that I wasn't getting enough exposure that I was supposed to, like that I was supposed to get, so I feel like I'm boxing's best-kept secret. I don't get enough attention. I don't get like enough exposure, so I just feel like I'm a secret. So I feel like I have to say a boxing best kept secret. I'm where it came.
Touching more on that, are you signed to any promoter right now, or are you still technically a free agent?
No, I'm actually signed with Bella Promotions.
Bella Entertainment. So yeah, I'm signing with the Bella and Tony Carter promotion.
Okay, great, great. That's good because, you know, Lou DiBella has obviously been showing and has shown that he's willing to pretty much work with any network and any other promoters. So I think in that regard, you're obviously on a good team because DiBella's willing to work, like I said, with any promoter and any network. So it opens up the possibilities of all these different opponents. How long have you been signed to Lou DiBella now? And then before you decided on DiBella, was there any others you were considering or any other promoters that approached you?
Yeah, I've been signed to Lou and the guys since our time of wrestling, but yeah, there were definitely other promoters in Top Rank. What's that? Tom Rosser, all different types of different promoters. But we felt Lou's often the best, and he was the best for me at the time. So we went with best works for me. And my team.
Did you come from a boxing family, Charles, or are you the first one in your family to be a professional fighter?
I'm not the first one in my family to be a professional fighter. I have an older brother named Isaiah Steen. He's 12-0. He turned professional before me. I had sisters that boxed in amateurs. My other brother, I had other brothers that boxed in amateurs. But I'm probably the person that took it the farthest in amateur, and during the amateur, I were all the amateurs. So I'm probably like the most accomplished one out of all of us in the amateurs so far.
Ideally, you know, assuming you get the win this Saturday, looking into the future a little bit, like you're 10-0 right now, obviously set with 7 KOs. Is there like a certain number of wins that you want to hit like a world title shot? Like, have you thought about that? Like, okay, by the time I reach 18-20 wins, I want to be in the ring for a world title shot.
Yeah, I think about that. I feel like next year, I should be like in a title limit or something like that, or something close to that. And then by the next year, after next year, so like beginning of 2021. I should be, or sometime in 2021, I should be fighting for a title. But next year, I feel like I should be the title eliminator in this year, or like early in 2021. Then sometimes in 2021, I should be fighting for a title.
The WBO should be vacant soon. Jaime Munguia should be stepping up, right?
That's true.
Yeah, Jaime Munguia is supposed to be going up in weight, so yeah, one of the titles should be vacant. But probably by the time I get up there, title be held by somebody.
Out of all the 154 pound fighters, you know, especially the current world champions, is there any of them that you would, you know, in the future, obviously, you're like, oh, I would love to have a fight with him? I mean, obviously, you've been sparring Tony Harrison, so I'm sure you'd be willing to fight him professionally, you know, especially because you guys know each other. It'd be, you know, a fun fight for you guys to go at it. But you know, besides him, is there anybody else that you would say like, oh, you know, I can have a really good fight with him?
Yeah, I would like to fight, like you said, Jaime Munguia. I would like to fight Julian J. Rock, too. I think both of them fights are good for me in the future.
Do you think J. Rock beats Jarrett Hurd again?
Yeah, I think J. Rock beats Jarrett Hurd, sure.
And then Jarrett Hurd probably moves up in weight. We did, you know, in doing some research for you for your interview, Charles, we found out, and you can tell me if this is true or not, but that while you're in training camp, you like to watch like the food channels, the Food Network, to plan where you're gonna eat after the fight. Is that true?
Yes, I would do that all day, especially like the 2 weeks before the fight, like when we start getting skinny and start. Just like when he laid back towards my food, making my portion smaller, things like that. Yeah, I always watch food videos. I don't know. It gives me motivation. I don't know. It's weird, but I got everybody in camp doing it now. So.
Oh, everybody. You said it gives you motivation, but like there's never been one time where you're just like, you're constantly watching it and you're just like, you know what, forget it. I'm going to have a cheat day right here.
I wish, I really started watching food videos toward the end of training camp, so I really can't no cheat days towards the end. Maybe at the beginning or like right when I get into camp, I can grab a couple little things, but at the end, this is like the most serious time, so I stay away from those type of things. At the end. I just use this motivation like that. Can't wait to after the fight, after I can reward myself with this. I can just pick out.
Have you planned your victory meal for this week?
That I plan on weekly food? Nah, I haven't planned. I'm still watching all these videos. I'm still deciding, but I think I know what I want. I don't know. Yeah, I gotta just keep watching more videos to have like a clear picture of it.
Well, you are gonna be in Chicago. Is there anything type of food you like from Chicago that you thought about, or maybe off the top of your head right now that you would like?
Deep dish.
Oh yeah, I gotta try that Chicago style pizza. So yeah, deep dish pizza. I gotta have that. I gotta try that before I get out of here. For sure, I'm having that. Even though that's probably not the grilled cheese meal I want, I'm definitely trying some Chicago style pizza.
So, as we mentioned, you know, you're fighting this Saturday on DAZN. Are you fighting towards the beginning of the card or the middle of the card? Have you been told where you're placed on the card yet?
No, I haven't been told where I was placed in the card, but the fight card kind of starts early. It starts at 4 p.m., so that's kind of – the fight's going to last that long all night, so that's kind of a good thing for me. But I don't know. I haven't heard – I'll probably find out when I get down there.
When are you traveling? Are you leaving tomorrow or?
I think Wednesday or Thursday. I think Wednesday.
Sounds good. Well, Charles, you know, we know you're on a couple hours ahead of us on the time zone here, so we know it is fight week for you, so we don't want to take up too much of your time, but we do want to give our thanks for you to jumping on here on the last round to promote your fight and obviously your career. 10-0, 7 KOs, 21 years old, fighting at 154 pounds. So your career is still at the beginning stages and you're still making your mark in this sport of boxing. So, you know, right now, go ahead and promote your social media, obviously your fight this Saturday, and if anything else you got upcoming, go ahead, man. The floor is yours.
I just want to thank you guys. You guys can follow me at Charles Conwell on all my social medias. Just keep up with the journey and keep up with what I'm doing. And just make sure you guys tune in October 12th on the Alexander Usyk undercard. I will be still in the show and putting on a real good fight.
Awesome. Well, once again, Charles, we appreciate it. And good luck this Saturday, man.
Thank you. I appreciate you guys for having me.
Thank you. Good luck.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
DAZN just popping up the cards, huh? DAZN's just popping up the cards. We had a delay on the hang up there. It's all right. We're live, technically. We record live is what I mean. I don't know if that makes sense. I don't know. Maybe I'm just sleep deprived. These young guys right now, you know, coming, like I saw a video of, because obviously David Benavidez just fought, and the reason I'm bringing up his name is because I saw a video pop up on my YouTube recommendations, and it was an interview for David Benavidez when he was like 13, and it was from Ellie Segback. He had interviewed him when he was like 13, like, and it says like, oh, future superstar David Benavidez, and I was like, oh, wow. And I always think about, you know, when we obviously interview these young guys who come on the show, you know, 5-10 years from now or whatever, like, you know, it's a good chance that they'll be at the top of the sport and be like, oh, yeah, they were on our show right when they were starting out. Remember us. Right, Mike?
Ellie Segback's been grinding that long doing that.
He's been doing it a long time, man. He has.
That's the first thing that popped in my head when you said that.
Yeah, he's been doing it a long time. Jeez. He's been doing it a long time, man. So, you know, you got to respect the grind, Mike. You got to respect the grind. But, you know, once again, thanks to Charles Bad News Conwell for jumping on this week on episode 51 of The Last Round. Well, let's jump into this past Saturday, the 5th of October, from MSG, Madison Square Garden in New York City on DAZN. Gennady Golovkin wins back the vacant IBF and IBO world middleweight titles by a controversial unanimous decision win over Sergey Derevchenko by scores of 115-112 twice and 114-113. Let's just get right to it. What'd you think, Mike?
I'm starting to think I like the underdogs, and I like people that apply pressure and throw a lot of punches because, you know, I thought Porter maybe snuck the fight against Spence, and then when I watched this, I wouldn't have been surprised if Derevchenko actually took the victory. I thought Gennady Golovkin started well, obviously knocked him down early on in the first round, and then I don't know whether maybe he was sick, because I thought early on that he looked very tired when he was going to the corner to Jonathan Banks. You know, he had the bucket up to his chest, and, you know, he just looked kind of defeated. Just his body language when he was sat there, he wasn't the old, you know, Golovkin. He wasn't, you know, like raring to go in the next round. He just looked like he had nothing left. And I don't know whether it was age, you know, father time catching up with him, or maybe he was sick. You know, people were kind of saying that he looked sick in the press conference, but are they just trying to keep that big money, that big cash cow of Triple G and Canelo? Because, you know, if those two fight, everybody wins. The pot of money to go around boxing will be huge. So is it just an excuse for the poor performance by him, or is it just 37-year-old pressure fighter? You don't get many pressure fighters, you know, going into their 30s. You know, he doesn't seem to have the legs that he had. He used to be able to cut off the ring. He really just throws one punch at a time now. And you can see that Derevchenko was kind of, you know, letting him throw that one punch and then was coming back with twos and threes. I thought he moved well, Derevchenko. I thought, you know, he'd throw maybe one, two punches, step to the side, throw another couple of punches. I thought he did very well. I thought his cut man did really well to stop that cut in the first round. It never really became an issue towards the end of the fight. It was kind of coming down into his eye a little bit, but, you know, you never really heard about it in the later rounds. Your commentary kind of stopped talking about it. So I thought he did a really good job.
What did you think? I thought that, I know obviously Golovkin, people are more surprised by the performance of Golovkin because obviously he's been dominant for so long, and, you know, but there's a reason why Triple G avoided Derevchenko last year. There's a reason. I mean, it's because of this. Because he knew it was a risk. And if people don't remember, when Canelo got popped for that testing, but VADA or something, there was like confusion around the card with, you know, with the rematch with Triple G and this and that, you know, what was going to happen. So, you know, obviously it ended up being Triple G had to fight a replacement opponent, and he had to move his fight to the StubHub Center, now the Dignity Health Center, down here in Southern California in Los Angeles. And Derevchenko was the mandatory, I think, for the IBF title, mm-hmm. which was Triple G had that belt. And, you know, there was obviously a strong possibility that was going to happen. But then there was reports during that time frame saying that Triple G was not going to go towards Derevchenko because he was a risk, which they were right. And this past Saturday proved that, you know, it obviously proved that, because Triple G knew that, okay, having the belts, you know, they just had to find, like, the guy, like, whoever Usyk is going to fight this Saturday, it's the same thing. I know Spong tested positive and stuff, but it honestly doesn't really matter who he fights this Saturday, because the card was more to introduce Usyk to the American audience and to introduce him into the heavyweight division, essentially. That's more what that card's about. It really is. It's not like Usyk is in there fighting Andy Ruiz or Anthony Joshua, you know, in his first bout at heavyweight. That's exactly what the Triple G fight when he ended up picking, Vanes Matarossian or Vanes, right, Matarossian? You know, and Matarossian, like, obviously when he got picked, like, people were just like, what? But, you know, it wasn't essentially Triple G's and his team's fault. You know, they needed an opponent, and they needed to keep that Canelo momentum going. They're like, okay, we just need to get a win and fight so we can fight Canelo in a couple months again. it's the same thing. It's the same thing here. Like, you know, people were saying, pushing that narrative around that time, saying, oh, he should have fought Derevchenko. And didn't he vacate the title?
Yeah.
Right? And then Jacobs picked it up.
And so did Canelo.
Yeah. Jacobs fought Derevchenko for the title, and he beat Derevchenko. But even that was a tough fight. Derevchenko gave him a tough, gave Jacobs a tough fight. So I think people were saying, like, oh, you know, I'm so surprised Gennady. Like, well, yeah, probably, obviously, Father Time is undefeated. But can't you just admit that he fought a guy who was just as good, or gave him a lot of trouble? Derevchenko's a good fighter. He's arguably, like, he has stake to say, you know, is he? I know Jacobs beat him and stuff, but, like, he could be, what, the third best heavyweight in the division right now?
I just want to correct you. Father Time lost to Manny Pacquiao.
Oh, God. You know, eventually it's going to happen. It caught up to Bernard Hopkins at age 50, so that's what I'm saying. Father Time has no expiration date. It'll keep going, even if you're, like, 100 still fighting. All right, one more year. 101, oh, that's when you're done.
What did you think of the corner work from Banks?
I know that's gained a lot of criticism, obviously, on social media and online. But I think it's hilarious that, like, at first when Triple G left Abel Sanchez and went to Jonathan Banks, people were like, oh, yeah, it's good he left him. He tried, you know, all this whole narrative. And then, like, people see, you know, I didn't see people complaining when he fought Steve Rolls. I mean, Jonathan Banks was in the corner. And then during this fight, I think people's, like, were talking from an emotional standpoint because Triple G was getting hit. He got hurt for the, like, visibly, he got hurt for the first time in his career, at least visibly from a fan perspective. I mean,
you're talking about the body shot.
I'm talking about the body shot, which honestly really pissed me off. That referee, Harvey Dock, did a horrible job. Horrible job. I don't know if he was nervous or there was nerves. I don't know why. I don't know what was going on through his head. But it's not like there was that moment when Derevchenko caught Triple G with a body shot, and you can obviously see it visibly hurt him because he dropped his guard to protect the body, and he kind of backed up, and Derevchenko noticed and started, you know, going after him. And as he was trying to hit him again to try to, you know, obviously knock him down or stop him, I've seen this like probably like 15 times already, like on a replay. The referee, Harvey Dock, like, jumps behind Triple G, and Triple G hits him, and then he doesn't know what to do for a split second, and then he goes and he, like, separates them. And those couple seconds, I think, gave Triple G, like, some type of recovery time. But, I mean, they were towards the end of the round, but there was probably at least 15, 16, 17 seconds left. And, I mean, yeah, maybe Triple G could have weathered the storm. It's likely he would have. But, I mean, like, if Harvey Dock never jumped in the back of Triple G to stop that momentum as Derevchenko was chasing him down, could we have seen Triple G been knocked down or something like that? I mean, he was obviously hurt. That's what really pissed me off. And then a couple rounds later, Triple G was going after Derevchenko on the ropes, and it was towards the end of the round too. And then Doc jumps in, and then he stops it with maybe like 4 seconds left in the round, and he, like, you can see it in his face. And then Triple G looks at him. He's like, "What are you doing?" And then the bell rings. He tells them to go back to their corner. Like, what the hell? That was honestly like. And I'm not one to say, like, oh, that was one of the worst whatever I've ever seen in my life. That was one of the worst performances I've ever seen in my life from a referee. It really was.
I think Harvey Dock had a little bit of side money on the
you know what? I didn't want
fight going to
I didn't want to go the conspiracy route. I really didn't. But it's hard not to acknowledge it. But I'm not gonna go that route. You went that route.
Yeah, I tweeted that out straight after the fight.
I'm not gonna. I didn't want.
He's just topping up his purse.
I didn't want to go down that rabbit hole. That's why I'm just saying that. Like, I don't know if the nerves got to him or whatever. But I mean, that's something you got to think about, because there was these two calls. He did them to both sides. Like, I don't get it. Like, what was he trying? Like, I don't know. It just really irritated me, especially that body shot one. Derevchenko hurt Triple G. He hurt him visibly, and then Doc, like. It's weird, like, it's like he literally jumped behind Triple G to stop his momentum. Like, he's in one spot, and then he's like, oh, this is it, this is the time. Boom, he jumps right behind him. And it's like, what did you, like, And I think people thought like, oh, it's because like Dervinchenko, like I was going for the body after that body shot, and it looked like it was a low, like it was low, because obviously he tells Dervinchenko to bring him up, but it wasn't. Like it wasn't. Like I don't know if it was just a bad angle he was at, but like it just did not make sense to me. Like oh man, like the fight was obviously great, even you know regardless of those moments, but I mean just think about like. What if Triple G got knocked down from like if that moment didn't happen after that body shot? I mean, we'll never know. I mean, I think he would have weathered the storm. There was only a couple seconds left, like enough, but I mean, like, well, we'll never know. Like, and then Triple G would had him on the ropes and the same thing. Like, I mean, like if there was a conspiracy, whose side was he on? You know?
Yeah, it was a strange decisions by the referee, but I don't know. Maybe the moment was just too big for him.
I mean, maybe. I mean, but it's not like he hasn't been in big fights out there before. That's what I don't understand. And then, you know, touching back on the trainer situation, I think people are just like up in arms about Jonathan Banks' performance and saying, oh, yeah, Triple G should leave him. And, you know, he didn't know how to talk to him in the corner and stuff like that. I think it's because a lot of those people were fans of Triple G and they saw that he was obviously. He met his match. Dervinchenko landed the most punches on Triple G than anybody has ever had, according to CompuBox.
On the coaching side, I think that people need to understand is that that's not his style. When you see him interviewed, he's very laid back. He's very casual. He's not a Teddy Atlas.
No.
He's not going to be in Triple G's face. You know, we're firefighters. We're piranhas.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that. That's not his style. You know, he just kind of calms him down, talks to him. Yeah. You know, what he was saying was good. He didn't say a lot, but what he was saying I thought was good and valid. But he just didn't scream it in his face, you know, and he wasn't like that motivational style, which, you know, some people want. So, you know, it's...
I think that's what it was, is just like, especially because Triple G was obviously facing adversity, like Dervinchenko was tagging it with some shots. And I think people wanted to see Banks, like, kind of turn up the heat on him. Like, hey, you know, you're getting hit. Maybe, like, you know, like an Abel Sanchez, like, Abel was never, like, you know, that animated, like a Teddy Atlas, obviously. Nobody's as animated as Teddy Atlas. But at least, like, Abel Sanchez, in terms of, like, the content he was spewing out in the corner was a little bit more detailed and a little bit more structured.
I actually didn't like his corner work.
You didn't?
No, I didn't. I thought Abel was... No, I didn't really like him for his corner work. I didn't often...
Lay out the opinion, Mike.
He was just kind of like, go out there and knock him out. Like, okay, that's a good tactic.
I mean, isn't that kind of what Banks was doing this past weekend?
I think he was a little bit more technical. You know, I just thought that, I feel for Dervinchenko. Everybody's just talking about how Triple G got old in that fight.
But I don't agree with that, though. I just think...
I thought he was good.
I just think that Dervinchenko is good.
Mm-hmm.
And he was going to be a tough outing regardless. Like, people need to stop playing. And the one thing I do respect about Triple G is that he didn't mention that he was sick. He didn't want to acknowledge it. Because he knew, like, I don't want to seem like I'm making an excuse. But obviously Eddie Hearn and Tom Loeffler come out and it's like, oh, well, you know, he doesn't want to mention it, but he was sick.
DAZN kept dropping it in. And I wondered.
Yeah, DAZN kept dropping it in.
And I was like, why does he keep saying that?
Are you guys saying that because he's kind of Dervinchenko's landing on him?
Yeah.
Are you guys trying to make it seem like, oh, yeah, if he was 100% healthy, this wouldn't be happening? No. Even if he was 100% healthy, Dervinchenko would have still gave him a fight.
His game plan was good. I thought Andre Rozier's, what he was saying in the corner, I thought was very good, telling him to stay away from the left hand of Golovkin.
Yeah.
Telling him to circle, you know, and just pot shot from the outside, let him throw.
Right.
1-2-3. 1-2. You know, just kept him moving, you know, wouldn't let him use those legs to cut off and pressure him, you know, which a lot of people did against Triple G just because, you know, the younger Triple G, his foot was so good, he just cut off the ring and he just couldn't get away from those shots.
Oh, yeah.
You know, whether he was sick or
Dervinchenko was backing him up most of the night.
It was a great performance. And I hope that, you know, Dervinchenko at least gets another shot.
I wouldn't mind seeing a rematch, honestly. I know people was like, oh, Triple G Canelo and Triple G Saunders and stuff like that. I mean, obviously, yeah, you would like to see those fights. But I honestly hope that Dervinchenko gets a shot again. Like, I wouldn't mind seeing a rematch. I wouldn't mind. I think Dervinchenko's going to be a world champion. He will.
Well, like you said, he's the Who Needs Him Club.
Right.
And definitely now after that performance.
He's high risk, low reward.
After that performance.
Nobody's going to touch him.
Exactly.
You know what's funny is that, like, he's promoted by Al Heyman. He's an Al Heyman fighter. Derevchenko.
And Lee DiBella.
Sam Watson was in his corner.
But Lee DiBella was going crazy at the end.
I know, but Sam Watson was in his corner, though, in Derevchenko's corner. He's a PBC guy.
I'm pretty sure he's
Lee DiBella. Are you sure? Sam Watson?
Yeah, because Lee DiBella was going crazy when Triple G dropped the title the first time.
Then why was Sam Watson in his corner?
Helping out, maybe? I don't know.
No way. They're not there unless Heyman is involved in some form or fashion.
Just in case he won? Like Don King?
No, I'm pretty sure Derevchenko's some type. Are you sure? Positive. Why was Sam Watson is like never there unless Heyman is involved, like PBC's involved in some form or fashion.
Call him up?
I'm pretty sure he has some connection. He might be promoted by DiBella, but like DiBella's technically a promoter. Heyman's a manager, technically. So I'm telling you, there's a connection. There's definitely a connection because I was like, oh, Sam Watson. I was like, is he a PBC guy? And the first thing I thought of, especially after he lost a close decision, I thought, put him against Charlo. They're both PBC guys. They're both represent. I think Al Heyman and PBC know, like, man, I think Derevchenko would beat Charlo.
I do.
But it'd be an interesting fight, especially because Charlo.
Charlo's more of a brawler. He has no defense.
I mean, who else does Charlo have to fight over there? And he has a world title now that he was essentially gifted.
Anybody but Derevchenko.
So, I mean, who else? He's not going to come across the DAZN and get Canelo or Triple G, like, even though he should, you know, especially having a world title now. But, I mean, like, put Derevchenko. I know Charlo's obviously the more marketable fighter, especially in the United States. I understand that. But, I mean, give Derevchenko a shot. You know, I don't know why people underestimated him. I think because of the Triple G aura and the hype that he's always had, obviously. I understand that. But Derevchenko is a ridiculously good fighter. Like I said, he's arguably the third best middleweight in the division, regardless if he has a title or not.
Called the technician for a reason.
Exactly.
You know, he kind of showed it that night. And, you know, he's the captain, president, and owner of the Who Needs Him Club. No one's going to want to touch him.
Yeah, nobody wants to touch him. And it's unfortunate. But, like, I mean, you know, at least he shows, like, yeah, I could fight. He could fight. I know he lost to Jacobs. I know he lost to Triple G. I understand that. But they were close fights. They were close fights. Some people had Derevchenko win. DAZN, the unofficial, was it Chris Mannix?
Chris Mannix, yeah.
The unofficial score for DAZN's broadcast had Derevchenko winning 114-113, I think. So, like, and Triple G is signed to DAZN. So if, like, you know, I don't know. I think, you know, some people had him winning. Some, you know, I think a majority had Triple G winning. But, I mean, I hope he gets a shot again. But, Triple G is obviously not going to rematch him anymore because he's hoping to get that Canelo fight in May. Hopefully. That's what he wants. And honestly, if I was Triple G, like, I know you wants a Canelo fight. I understand that. But honestly, if I was him, I'd go fight Billy Joe Saunders at, like, Wembley Stadium or something.
If you were Canelo?
If I was Triple G.
I think on that performance, taking away the sickness, if that was him as he is now and it's just father time, I think Billy Joe schools him.
Yeah, I think so too. But, I mean, obviously we know that Triple G signed this lucrative deal with DAZN. What is it? How many fights? Six?
Triple G, six for like $100 million.
So, I mean, like, it's likely that he's going to retire after these fights. I mean, he has four fights left on that agreement after this, mm-hmm. after this past fight. I mean, I think he knows, like, okay, after this, I'm done. I'm going to cash out. I mean, if he can't get Canelo, go fight Billy Joe in Wembley Stadium or something, you know? Or even in Madison Square Garden again, at least.
So we're not seeing Canelo 3 in May then?
I mean, like, it's likely. It's likely. I mean, like, because Canelo honestly doesn't really have any other opponents either.
According to the people in the know, they say that, you know, they legitimately hate each other. Canelo doesn't want to fight him.
Yeah, he doesn't. I believe that. I believe he doesn't really like it. Like, he hates the guy.
Supposedly to do with what he said about when he tested positive. He's like, oh, I knew it. I could see track marks on his arms.
Yeah.
On his body during the
fight. And then Triple G did insult Canelo's fans. Like, I think he said, like, oh, they're all frauds or something. Like, you're a fraud if you're, like, a Canelo supporter or something. So it's just like, I mean, hey, I mean, and then, I mean, like, think about it like this. Would Triple G's stock be as big as it is if there was no Canelo across from him to bounce off of?
No, I think you...
It's just like Mayweather and Pacquiao as their careers were going concurrently. Would Pacquiao's... Mayweather was already a star after the De La Hoya fight, especially with the HBO 24/7s and stuff. He made his stardom, obviously, outside the ring, and he can back it up inside the ring, whether people admit it or not. And then Pacquiao comes in, you know, and Pacquiao's stock and stardom rise because Mayweather is in the same division. They're both arguably at that time the two best fighters in the world in the same weight class, which is never happens. Well, I mean, it's rare, and it's kind of like a villain and a hero, you know? I mean, like I said, going back to my question, would Triple G's stock and stardom be as big if there was no Canelo across from him?
No.
Throughout these years.
It would get to a certain limit if he was just knocking out B-level fighters. There has to be that big step-up fight where he tests himself, you know, and it's just not an easy first, second, third round knockout, which... Triple G was doing until he kind of stepped up and fought, you know, Jacobs and then Canelo. But no, I think, like you said, for every hero, you need that villain who's going to test them, push them. And Canelo seemed to be that one, you know. And I think Canelo also didn't like the fact that, you know, when all the fans were saying that he avoided him.
Yeah.
And a lot of the Mexican public, you probably attest to this, is they love Triple G. They love it. They love his style.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that also didn't, you know, sit too well with Canelo.
No, you're right. You're right. But I mean, I can see them fighting again, especially because DAZN is writing the checkbooks. They're writing the checks. They have the checkbook. So I can totally see them fighting again. But I think, like, Canelo is obviously going to make it really hard to make. But I mean, obviously, if they make it again, the interviews leading up to that fight, they're going to be like, Canelo, like, you know, what happened? Were you forced into this by DAZN? Like, I thought you didn't want to fight him. Like, are you happy? Like, you know, are you even happy being here at the, you know, doing the media rounds? Like, what's going on? Obviously, he's going to get questions like that. Like, what was the deciding factor why you had to fight him? Like, did DAZN tell you? Like, hey, you know, I would love to see the DAZN contract. Like, what it says, like, hey, you know, you have to deliver for us on a certain scale, or like, you know, is that money guaranteed, the 365?
That's what I was always wondering, because if it's, I don't know, 330 million per fight, regardless of who you fight, then why would you, you know, why would you pick Triple G when you can go and fight an easier touch? That's what I've always wondered. Or is it contingent on, you know, how much the fight makes? Or so, you know, trying to reach out to someone from DAZN, you would be interesting if they could, you know, find that out.
No, you're right. You're right. I mean, who knows? If I was Canelo, especially if he beats Kovalev, especially if he knocks out Kovalev, I think I would definitely take the fight with Triple G, because I mean, Canelo's fought Jacobs. Jacobs is technically 168 pounder. He could be a 175 pounder if you wanted. Jacobs and Kovalev, if you think about it, are kind of similar in size. Jacobs is a big guy.
Do you think that Canelo comes back from 165 though to 160? Or do you think he goes back to 168?
No, he's mentioned that he's going to go back to 160 and defend his belt. He's mentioned that in interviews.
That's another thing though. Father Time cutting that weight.
Yeah, but he's only like 20 years old. Like,
he's been doing it since he's 15.
I know, but I think he's fine though. Like, he's you know, he doesn't have to worry about that. And he keeps his options open. Going from 160 to 175, I mean, you know, now he opened the... If he stayed at 160 and he didn't move from there, like, he's fought Jacobs. He's fought Triple G. Triple G twice.
The 175 is just a hit and run, though. He's seen what he thinks is a weak link in Kovalev.
Yeah.
And it's going to be...
I think it's going to be a tough fight, though.
It'll be a one and done.
You think? I mean,
a 175?
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be a one and done. He's going to fight in that weight with just that once, and that's it. But, I mean, I think it is going to be a tough fight. But, you know, we'll touch on that as it gets closer. But, you know, we'll just see how this middleweight landscape turns out. But I want to leave it with, like, I hope Dervinchenko gets another shot somewhere. Because, you know, I'm glad that, like, on this stage he was able to be seen by a lot of eyeballs to show, like, yeah, this kid can fight. But like you said, high risk, low reward. which usually means that the top guys aren't going to want to fight you.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. We'll see how it turns out. But that was a great fight. Great fight. Two back-to-back contenders of the year.
Exactly. Right there. Yep.
But, you know, rounding out that card, Ivan Baratchik gets the fourth round TKO over Gabriel Bracero for the vacant WBA Intercontinental Super Welterweight title. What'd you think of his performance?
Good performance coming back after the loss in the World Boxing Super Series against Josh Taylor. I think you could see from quite early on, he was just kind of throwing bombs at the 38-year-old veteran. So Baranchek, I think he's come back a few more comeback fights and then he'll be up there again. You know, when he fought Josh Taylor, that was a good back and forth fight. So definitely, you know, one to watch, always in entertaining fights.
I like Josh. When's the Josh Taylor and Prograde fight?
It's on the now Derek Chisora and...
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot.
Supposed to be Joseph Parker until he got bitten by a spider.
That's crazy, man. Spider-Man.
That is also October
26th. Spider-Man.
That is also October 26th.
Spider-Man. And then also on that card, he was on our show last week and then loses his pro debut. Mighty Joe Ward.
It'll get changed to a no contest.
Probably. But it was just such a freak accident. So I don't know if you caught it, but it was the first round. Is it with the second round or first round? I think it was the first round.
No, it was second round.
It was second round? Yeah. So Marco Delgado's like coming forward to try to back him up. And I think Ward is like taking a step back. And then like he just, I guess, stepped in the wrong direction.
Marco stands on his foot.
That's what happened. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then like he falls to the ground and you can see right away like, oh, something's wrong. And they do a zoom in on the knee. Oh my God, that was disgusting. And then the ringside doctor comes in, pops it right back into place. I'm like, oh gosh. And then, you know, and then they ruled that it was a TKO.
They ruled it was a TKO round two, but according to a statement that Lou DiBella put out that he's going to appeal to the New York commission because no punch landed. He was just trying to get out of the way of a punch.
Right.
And Marco Delgado just stepped on his foot, which then made kind of, you know, one leg went underneath him and the other leg was straight. You know, kind
that
of
was
a,
that was unfortunate, man.
Yeah, it was
and it was his pro debut.
And he was winning every minute of every round.
He was from the 2016 Olympic team from Ireland. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, that was an unfortunate turn of events for him. You know, especially after he was on our show last week and he was excited. He was like, you know, this Saturday, blah 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 blah. You know, I'm making my pro debut, Madison Square Garden. You know, and that was so unfortunate. I was like, oh man, you know. So
I read that he sold something approximately $60,000 worth of tickets.
Not bad. Not bad at all. Not bad at all. You know, that shows something. That shows something. And also this past Saturday from the Dort Federal Event Center in Flint, Michigan on Showtime Championship Boxing. Showtime's still there. Still hanging on. They still got the lifeline going. Jaron Ennis gets the third round TKO over Damian Daniel Fernandez, who gets the second loss of his career. Ennis, at 22 years old, is getting active again after some promotional issues kept him sidelined. What exactly happened? Why was he sidelined? Just politics?
Just politics in boxing. You know, the usual. Politricks.
Politricks.
Lennox Lewis used to say.
Politricks. That's right. I forgot about that.
He looks the real deal, though. I think, you know, he's kind of one of those up-and-coming guys, it's kind of in the shadow, unfortunately, of, you know, Shakur Stevenson and all those guys that tend to get the bigger promotional push. You know, he looks already kind of like a seasoned veteran, very composed when finishing. I like the way he does a touching jab just to try and set up the power shots, changes the rhythm, goes upstairs and downstairs. Very, very, very good. Definitely one to watch. I think, you know, he'll just be someone who picks up world titles and kind of under the radar away from those bigger names that are getting pushed there.
Right. And then obviously, you know, touching on it quick because I don't want to give it too much publicity. The original main event for that Showtime card was supposed to be between Clarissa Shields and
Ivana Habanza.
Right. I wasn't sure how to pronounce her name. But obviously there was that whole incident where somebody from Clarissa Shields' team was getting into it with her opponent's trainer. And I guess they were talking smack to each other. I don't know what happened. And then, like, reportedly somebody somebody comes in and knocks him out. And he was there. I mean, there's video of it online, obviously. And then he's like laying there, like knocked out, unconscious, all this blood and everything. And then the ambulance takes him. Ultimately, the fight was canceled.
Rightly so.
Like I said, we're not going to dive in too deep into this because there's no reason to give it publicity. One word answer. What did you think?
Disgusting.
Let's move on. Let's move on. Rounding up the show, fight previews this Saturday from the First Direct Arena in Leeds on ESPN Plus. Josh Warrington, 29-0, goes up against Sofyan. How do you say that?
I would say
Takouched.
It's probably something along those lines.
Something like that. Man, these names are just getting harder and harder every week. This is for the IBF Featherweight World. This is IBF Featherweight World title, really?
Josh Warrington, yeah.
Oh, wow. Oh, he does have the title. Mm-hmm. That's right. I forgot. That's right. So, I mean, he didn't fight guys like Valdez and all those guys. Like, and Valdez, I think, is moving up to 130 now. I mean, Leo Santa Cruz and those guys are still out there. Shakur Stevenson and Joey Gonzalez are going to go out at it.
It's a soft touch because, you know, he fought Lee Selby, beat Lee Selby, then turned around and fought Cal Frampton when he could have gone back, had a homecoming fight. You know, he won the title. He fought Lee Selby, Cal Frampton, Kid Galahad. So he's decided, you know, have a little soft touch, a little warm-up fight before, I would imagine, fighting one of the bigger names later down the line.
Yeah, we'll see. I like Warrington, though. I think he can produce some pretty exciting fights, especially when he has the opponent across the ring from him. And also this upcoming weekend from the Wintrust Arena in Chicago, Illinois, on DAZN. As we mentioned at the beginning, Alexander Usyk is making his heavyweight debut on DAZN. His original opponent, Tyrone Spong, is likely out as the opponent because he reportedly tested positive for some type of banned substance. It was actually happened within the last couple hours. But, I mean, like we mentioned, this is just kind of like an introduction to the heavyweight division for Usyk. So don't expect for the backup opponent, whoever it is, to be some, you know, Andy Ruiz, Anthony Joshua. Obviously, it's not. This card is more for Usyk to be introduced to DAZN, to be introduced to the American audience, and to be introduced to the heavyweight division. So, you know, I'm sure they're looking towards the future. So the Anthony Joshuas, the Andy Ruiz's, Deontay Wilders, you know. And obviously, Usyk, at one point within the last year or so, was one of the best fighters, if not the best fighter in the world, when he became undisputed at cruiserweight. So, I mean, obviously he's lost some steam, but that's what it is, you know, without going too far deep into that. Unless you want to add something, but.
No, it'd be nice to see who they pick. Hopefully they pick someone, you know, of maybe an American or a Mexican heavyweight, you know, something that, you know, will draw the fans, because the card's not exactly littered with, you know, big name fights and stuff like that. Like you said, it's more of a showcase to see how he acclimatizes moving up from cruiserweight to heavyweight with the weight. So everyone's been looking forward to it. You know, his original fight against Carlos Takam was called off in May because Usyk got injured, had a bicep injury. So hopefully it's a good fight.
Also on that card, Dmitry Bivol, WBA light heavyweight world champion, defends his title against Lennon Castillo. I know people were complaining about the opponent, but, you know, I think Bivol's another one of those guys. High risk, low reward.
Definitely.
He's a dangerous fighter. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just his profile just isn't up there. He's not up there in terms of, you know, being noticed, but he's a great fighter. He's good.
Good division.
Yeah. Also Jessica McCaskill, 7-2, is going up against Erica Annabella Farias for the WBC and WBA super lightweight title. And then obviously our guest from earlier in the show, Charles Conwell, 10-0, goes up against Patrick Day for the USBA super welterweight title. Also friend of the show, past guest, Anthony Sims Jr., cousin of Floyd Mayweather Jr., 19-0, puts up his undefeated streak against Morgan Fitch, 19-3-1. And then also on that card, which is one of Charles Conwell's buddies, sparring partners, of course, is it Otha?
Otha Jones III,
3-0, goes up against Eric Manriquez, 7-8-1. So like you said, it's just a card to kind of promote these fighters, you know. And I do want to round out the show with Dana White saying you know, within the next month or so, he's supposed to announce his tentative plans for boxing. He's already hired a couple people. And he's already said this before, but he reiterated again that he wants to use his own titles because he feels that the UFC championships already have enough pull that people recognize him and they'll respect him. And he once again mentioned that he's not going to recognize any of the sanctioning bodies, WBA, WBC, WBO, etc. Quickly, what do you think about that?
I like the idea of it. I like the way that, you know, in the UFC, you know who the champion of the division is because there's just one. There'll maybe be an interim champion if somebody's injured. And then when the person comes back from injury, the title holder and the interim champion will get it on.
Right.
The platform is good. Will it work?
And he said he wants to put it on Fight Pass, like boxing on Fight Pass, which is the UFC streaming. So, but he said that he would have a TV deal. That's what he said. So
he said he's willing to work, you know, with
Al Heyman
and
Eddie Hearn. Even
he's kind of mentioned a few people, and it may work if everyone clubs together and kind of agrees with what they want to do, because obviously, you know, the sanctioning bodies, they take a substantial fee,
right?
Every time that you fight for the title.
You're right. And there's, and you know, and you know, I've seen different opinions on it. Some people are saying like, oh no, he's gonna pay the boxers like he pays UFC fighters. He's gonna pay them way less. Boxers deserve to get paid. I mean, like, nobody's necessarily saying that, but like, you also got people complaining like, oh, we never see the best fight the best. We never see Crawford and Spence, this and that. Well, obviously with UFC, yeah, they might be making less than MMA fighters, or be making vice versa.
Less than boxers?
Yeah, less than boxers. Mm-hmm. But UFC forces them to fight the best. I mean, look at Diaz Masvidal, for example, fighting November 2nd, the same day as Canelo Kovalev. Diaz just fought like last month and calls out Masvidal in the post-fight. And like 2 weeks later, it's reportedly already getting made. And then like 3-4 weeks later, it's official. Well, I mean, you never see that in boxing.
No, they do. That side of it is good. The only side of it is when you speak to the fighters, is the UFC squeezes the pennies out of them. You know, they have that Reebok deal. They then can't get sponsorships elsewhere.
But you don't think that Dana White knows that, especially being like talking with Al Heyman, like he knows that the pay thing is going to be an issue. So I'm pretty sure he wouldn't have jumped into this if he doesn't know how to approach that. I mean, the guy's a billionaire, and he's obviously, he worked with Al Heyman for the Mayweather-McGregor. I don't know. I think people are underestimating him, and the sanctioning bodies, if this really happens, they're going to be pissed.
Only time will tell.
Only time will tell. We'll wrap it up there. Once again, big thanks to Charles Bad News Conwell, who fights this upcoming Saturday on the DAZN card, on the undercard of Alexander Usyk. We'll be back next week. I think we have somebody lined up next week, but we won't, you know, mention anything until
we reveal in case they fall through.
Just they fall through. So we've learned our lesson there. Mm-hmm. So once again, thank you guys for listening to the Last Round Podcast, whether you're listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, whatever. On the way to work, on the way home from work, in the bathroom, in the kitchen, while you're going to sleep. Who knows? We could be putting you to sleep right now. I hope not. But maybe we are. We thank you guys for listening each every week. We appreciate the support. Once again, I'm Danny Z. For my co-host, Michael Shepard, this is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate,